Hello and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. There's all kinds of family. We chose this one. This is episode 346, Too Fast, Too Furious, lap 14. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too. And this episode is brought to you by Cult Gaia. Cult Gaia designs beautiful heirloom pieces that will live in your closet forever. Check out their recently opened fifth store in the Miami Design District. Shout out to Cult Gaia.
Well, shout out to Cult Gaia and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. With us tonight, we've got the one in the convertible that is too chrome, and we've got the one in the non-convertible with Monica Fuentes. Welcoming back to the show for the second of many ride-along episodes, we have Walt Hickey and Kim Bassine. Hello, gentlemen.
Hey,
how's it going?
Welcome, welcome, welcome back.
We are so delighted to be back. We are so delighted to be on this adventure with you guys as we do another lap.
A shout out to Miami too.
Hey, by the way, shout out to Miami.
Shout out to Miami. Hey,
shout out to, Miami for sure.
I will give a hint. We've teased it before. A future lap of this show, not the next lap, but probably the lap after that will be the Too Fast, Too Furious lap, which will be either sequels or movies set in Miami or just like in the movies with actors from this movie. So Miami is going to play a big role on the show, you know, in about 2 years or so. Like, you know, considerable because like laps take forever. But like, we're going to give Miami its due on this show.
Will Smith is going to be on. He's going to sing Welcome to Miami.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
It's gonna be great.
Wait, oh, so speaking of Will Smith, is it weird that this is where my mind?
No, we have to address this.
So Walt has his Numlock News,
yes.
And part of Numlock News there is the awards supplement.
There is the awards supplement, yeah.
Honestly, it makes watching the Oscars a little boring because Walt gets every single goddamn thing right. He's just like, here's all the predictions that you went across the board. Even when Michael was just like, here's where I disagree with Walter. Even, you know, he was wrong there. So, you know, you got that right, too.
We had a good year.
But two things I want to get your take on first, Walt, and also everybody else, but Walt, because you are the awards guy. Number one, what do we think of the awards? And also number two, what do we think of so much Fast and Furious stuntage in the stunts montage that Ryan Gosling, like, they didn't really announce really that they're going to do best stunts, I think, starting next year, like, which is very cool. But like, they're just out here talking about stunts for seemingly no reason. And then they have like four or five different Fast and Furious movies represented. So what do we think of the awards show in general and, you know, this year's awards and those Fast and Furious stunts?
I thought that they have to be telegraphing the stunt award. I feel like that was the acknowledgement tacitly, if anything like that there's momentum behind it. They did add a new Oscar. It's going to come out next year. It's best casting. But, you know, what they did specifically was that they made basically the stunt branch. And as a result, like, once you get a branch, it's usually a little bit of time until you actually get the Oscar for that thing. That's what happened with casting. Mm. They added a casting branch. They used to be under the members at large. And so once you become your own thing, that means that you're basically kind of in line to get your own Oscar. And I couldn't be happier with that.
Is it going to be like entire stunts in the movie or a stunt? You know, I'm guessing entire stunts, right? Like,
the person who would win would be the stunt director, basically, or maybe the first unit director. It depends on how they want to play.
But it wouldn't be for like the bridge jump. It would be for like all of Fast
exactly.
Five.
It would be until you know. You remember like it's the stunt team is like when you win an Oscar, the person who actually gets the Oscar is the head of the makeup department, the head of the hairstyling department.
Yeah,
and so as a result, they would basically just be the head of the department for this movie. And if it merited it, maybe it's like the car stunt head as well as the rest of the explosion stunt head.
Cool.
There is like a non-zero chance that Tom Cruise suddenly devotes his life to learning the craft of stunt coordination just so he can win this Oscar.
Okay. I mean, so like I have like I like this year's Oscars. I thought it was clean. I thought it was direct. I thought like the five people talking to the five people thing's great. It grounds.
I really like that. I agree with you, bud. I think that worked really, really well.
What do you think about My Eyes See Oppenheimer?
I think that Al Pacino is a national treasure, and any smack talk to the effect will absolutely result in a feud.
Exactly. Agreed.
I thought it was very funny just how anticlimactic it was. Like, you almost couldn't script it in a less anticlimactic way or a more anticlimactic way. Just
have I ever told you about Al Pacino's phone? I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. Have I ever told you about Al Pacino's phone? Okay, I've told you.
Not told me about Al Pacino's phone.
Okay, so this is very silly, but I went to this event that was hosted at the previous company that I worked at, and they were interviewing Bennett Miller, the guy who directed Moneyball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a big Moneyball guy, and Bennett Miller is an interesting director. I think he also did like Foxcatcher or something like that. I'm diverting myself. The story is that Al Pacino was in the row directly in front of me, and I had a full view of Pacino's girlfriend the entire time, and I was, you know, interested in the conversation that was occurring, but I was very interested in Mr. Pacino.
Camila Morone's mom, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. Wow, nailed it. So the reason I bring this up is that
Joe has a big crush on her, not on the mom, on Camila.
Yes. the first, like, Al comes in late, sits down. You can hear music, opera, coming from headphones, AirPods in his pocket. Somebody behind him eventually musters the courage to be like, Mr. Pacino, I think that your music is playing. And he turns it off, and it does turn off, so therefore it is. But in turning it off, he had to remove his cell phone from his pocket. And this is one of the most important moments of my life, because Al Pacino's cell phone case, and if you Google this, listener, I urge you immediately to Google this. I'm going to vamp a little bit so that you have an opportunity to type in Al Pacino's cell phone case into your computer. Now that you have been given a requisite opportunity to type Al Pacino cell phone case into his your computer.
I forgot about this. Oh my, that is perfect.
If you were foolish enough to not type this in, Al Pacino has a Shrek covered cell phone case.
And not just a Shrek-covered cell phone case, but a case that is like the Gosling all-over T-shirt, but Shrek.
Oops, all Shrek.
All Shrek, lousy with Shrek. It practically screams, donkey. It's amazing. It was in the New York Post at one point. But this was for a few, like until I realized that this was on the internet, this was my like classic, like, oh, you go to the park and Bill Murray tells you no one will ever believe you. Because no one would ever believe me that it's a Shrek encrusted cell phone case. But anyway, that's Al Pacino can do whatever he wants at the Oscars forever because of that cell phone case.
I love it. That's beautiful. I had no idea about this, and I'm so glad you shared that with me.
I also do like that there was like seemingly, I didn't see the blowback, but there's blowback. He's just like, that's what they wanted. And they're like, all right, cool. Like that's, you know, that's all. That's
what he said. Yeah. He was like, that was the fucking producer. Man. Them, not me. But you're right, Joey. Like he didn't even give like a nice pop. He was like, oh, my eyes see Oppenheimer. Like it was like, oh, I was startled.
I mean, it was anticlimactic anyway, right? It would have been, there was no way for him to make it.
And the Oscar goes too, which is the line, like they copyrighted it. Like,
but, you know, when they make the Christopher Nolan biopic one day and someone plays Al Pacino, that line will be immortalized, you know. Boy, oh boy.
Oh boy.
But yeah, so shout out to Walt for getting almost every single, major award. You got it right, yeah. Even the one that you're like, this one is a toss up. Just you still got that right.
Yeah. So, you're setting unreasonable standards for yourself now.
No, I do this every year and I eat shit some years. For a while, I wasn't getting Best Picture right at all, but I think the model's caught up and it's pretty good now. So,
well, now you're just, because every year you add the qualifier, like, they've added a lot of people. Yeah. I might not have it right this year. And then it's just like, well, you know, 100% across the board.
It does. Yeah. I do like it when I get 100% across the board. I am humble enough to admit that I've had years where I get like, you know, 4 out of 6, which I still think, by the way, it's not easy to do when it's 1 out of 5.
That's not an easy run.
Yeah. So, but I feel pretty good about the model and we had a good year. And I feel like I'm in the locker room after a great game. And like, yeah, I thought that they had us right there. You know, I really thought that it could have been Lily Gladstone. But yeah, we got it in the back. Like,
well, speaking of Oscar worthy films, we are here to talk about Too Fast, Too Furious, a movie that, as far as I know, won no Oscar.
As far as we know.
It's still
there's still a chance.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say too.
Stop the count.
It did win 2 Teen Choice Awards for Choice Movie Chemistry. Paul Walker just won that solo somehow. And Choice Movie Fight Action Sequence, which is Paul Walker versus Tyrese Gibson.
Paul Walker wins for Best Chemistry with Paul Walker.
What's like the biggest acting award that any of the actors in this film won?
In this
film? Did someone win like a Golden Globe or something?
Oh, wait, hold on. I have a very important thing about this film. So I looked up, because I was trying to see, I think I was looking for Oscar sort of thing, or like, no, I was looking for 80s moments, because we have the most 80s moment, whatever. And I'm like, James Remar, I know he's been around for a while, maybe he's got something like iconic 80s role. And I went to James Remar's IMDb, and there's the known for section, which I think is either machine populated, or if you pay for IMDb Pro, you can like set that yourself. For some reason, when I looked the other day, I don't know if it's still true, he was only known for one thing, so he was missing three different squares, and the only thing he was known for was Sex and the City: A Farewell, the 2004 made-for-TV farewell special to the original series, in which he played himself. So you're like,
it's
James,
like a docu.
Yes.
It's like a docu talking thing that he just commented.
It was like a
on
1 hour,
the
like
City.
To capture more eyes, like after the finale. Like, here's, you know, the farewell to the show. So you're like, James Remar, star of Too Fast, you know, Father of Death, Dexter in a million different things. Oh yes, the guy who played himself in the Farewell to Sex and the City documentary on HBO in 2004. I'm like, what? How does that even happen? Paul Walker never won any. I bet. Is there an Oscar winner?
John Singleton, the director, cast? Is an Oscar
yes.
nominee, famously.
Yes,
but I don't think that there is an Oscar winner in this particular cast.
Well, what did you guys think about Too Fast, Too Furious this time? Because one of you,
me, probably
had not seen this or not seen very much or did not remember much of this. You were more excited about the early one. So what do you think of his initial thoughts on this go round?
This is an extremely strange movie that is pretty good, mm-hmm. but also, like, you know, we were joking at the end of the previous episode being like, of course, what's the sequel going to be? Well, it's going to continue the relationship that worked the best, Vin and whoever he's with. And it obviously took it in a different direction. There are sometimes like scripts in Hollywood that like get pitched for stuff, and it's just like, yeah, but we should find a way to anchor it to a franchise, right? That's going to get butts in seats. And so they'll take like just kind of a general thing and they'll make it into like a Star Warsy thing by adding a few things. Or there, like, the big one that I've always remembered is there was just this like kind of science fiction concept show that they were like, yeah, it works, but also we're going to make this a Battlestar Galactica prequel. Just deal with it. And so that became Caprica. And so like this feels like that kind of thing where like I got an idea for a heist movie in Miami, and it's a cops and robbers kind of thing with drug lords, and it's like, how many cars are in it? Because I have a thought. Like,
yeah,
there's this wonderful like bait and switch line near the beginning of this film where Brian is enlisted to help the police out, and he says, the only way I'll do this is if I get to pick the driver. And you're like, is it Vin ain't here.
We got
baby boy to tag in. It's all good.
Wait, did we talk about in the first movie, did you guys watch through the credits last episode, that there's the post-credit scene of Vin in Mexico?
Yes, we absolutely have seen this.
Okay.
Because
it's weird. I think when we like discovered that for this podcast, we're like, oh my God, there's more of the movie that we never saw before. And then it's kind of weird that there isn't one here, because obviously in Tokyo Drift, there's, you know, not the credit scene, but like there's the button where Vin is back, yes. right? Where Dom is back. But like here, it's just like, no, it's just the movie ends.
Yep.
So.
Nope. There's no more movie. Sorry.
No more movie.
Yeah. But no, I would say that my thoughts were like, again, I hadn't seen this one because I think that the last time that I really did a thorough comb through it was the Vin-related films. And so this one, obviously, Vinless. And as a result, I just hadn't seen a lot of it. But like, I would just say at the end of the day, actually pretty good movie. Like, you actually like feel like this one was directed. Like, I think is kind of the big one.
Yeah, Singleton's there, right?
Yeah. Like you can actually detect that. I think it's, I really kind of love the cinematography in a way. It feels like, you know, the previous one that we talked about was like obviously shot like a movie was in the 90s and that kind of thing. And this one kind of felt like there were some flourishes that I think Miami would kind of uniquely could provide that is then never seen again in the rest of the franchise.
Most biceps. All the films. Is They're in right? Miami. There's got to be exposed male bicep.
Yeah, there was not a sleeve to be found.
Yeah, Tyrese is wearing a sleeveless sleeveless outfit for a while, which he then takes off and then unbuttons and just continues to wear that just without the button.
Whole time.
Which Brian then calls a blouse. Let's not forget that. Put your blouse back on.
Yeah.
Put your blouse back on.
It's also just like, it's very clear that they didn't have a good sense of who these characters would eventually become. And like, I don't know. I dug it. I thought it was a good movie. And like, the thing is, like, I actually genuinely was surprised by like, not, there's not like a twist, so to speak, but like when they go into the storage unit, it's like, we got him surrounded. We got him dead to rights. And then like every car in Miami leaves. That is actually a pretty good set piece that you don't really see too much of that down the line.
Yeah, I and love the
Academy
huge
Academy Award nomination for best stunt.
I believe it. They ought that. They deserve that. It's a good one. They did catapult a car into a boat, which is, you know, 2/3 of trains, planes, and automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we talked about the stunt Oscar, I'm really sad that like it didn't exist, because Fast and the Furious would have like crushed a bunch of these.
Oh yeah,
I think they would have won like a ton of these. So I'm just in a state of disappointment, knowing all the forgotten Oscars we could have had. Maybe it's the Oscars we met along the way.
Instead, they'll just have to rest on their billions and billions of dollars earned at the box office.
Fair. No, Diesel wants that. Diesel wants it. He believes that
he wants it. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, he wants an Oscar too. Like, even if he got one for stunts, I think he'd be like, my Oscar winning film franchise.
That's the next.
Like,
step.
He wouldn't.
It's coming.
It's coming.
Like, he wouldn't say that, like, you know, like, oh, we won a stunt Oscar. Like, he would claim that as if he won Best Picture, right? Like, there's no other way he's going
to
play this.
I mean, I think that if he really wants to, like, chip away at it, like, number one, I think that, like, you could probably just hire Ludwig Göransson to do the score for the next Fast and the Furious film. Like, he would do it.
Yeah.
Probably. Best stunt counts. Like, best song counts. As Oscar winning film. Yeah. Like 8 Mile is an Oscar winning
film. Barbie is an Oscar winning film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So why not stunts?
Yeah.
Soon.
Why not stunts?
Jason Momoa.
Honestly, casting's pretty great. Like they would have won for Fast Five would have won or ought to have won the best casting Oscar if it had existed.
Has there been buzz around like what movies would have been nominated? I'm trying to figure out like what best casting would have been like this year. Like what is it for like specific,
it would be
is it for like ensemble?
It would absolutely be. It's basically like the best ensemble that you can assemble. Like just the fact that they accomplished the Oppenheimer cast on the budget that they did is the single best casting in American history. Like
now like a movie like for instance like a Mission Impossible that gets bigger and bolder and I mean or Fast and Furious, right? Where it's like it keeps assembling and growing this core, this family, but like the next movie might only add two people. Like, that isn't really award, because you're not, like, retroactively being like, you've built such a great thing, it's just, like, this particular, does that make
it
sense?
Does, like, but my counterpoint is, like, what if the thing that you add is the lime zest that makes this mojito work? Like, what if you have added Dwayne The Rock Johnson to the Fast and the Furious franchise, and all of a sudden you have a Negroni baby? Like, it's finally, like, you know, you can build it together, and it comes out well. And, like, I would just say, like, I think, you know, absolutely. We are not too deep into this franchise to see an Academy Award in its future.
Well, how important is it going to be, like, for casting to find a new talent, like a debut star that you cast in their first leading role, and it was a great idea? Not just.
Well,
like,
I was going to say. So here's what I would nominate for this past year. I would nominate Oppenheimer, even though I don't really like that movie that much. Bo is Afraid, Barbie. I think first role or early role, Are You There, God? Is Me, Margaret. I think that movie is perfectly beautifully cast. Bottoms, which is also filled with younger, newer talent. I think that's really spread well across the board. Maybe even like Killers of the Flower Moon, right? Where it's like a lot of like, how do you find an underserved community and holdovers? I mean, it's a lot of people who have already been nominated for like the big awards already, but you know, I don't know. With that said, do you guys have a pick for most 80s moments in Too Fast, Too Furious? Remember, we're picking every movie this last
year. Just most 80s. Most doesn't need to be a moment.
The 1980s.
Interesting. I mean, Kim, I know that you have one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine is, let's see. It's not a moment. It's Roberto and Enrique.
Mm-hmm.
These two.
They're very 80s.
They're
so...
So first off, let's start with the outfits, right? The outfits are absolutely... They're openers, the two suits. They got the collared shirts that are fully just flared out all the way up over the shoulders, over the lapels. Beautiful. And then Carter wears one of those in the end scene sequence.
Carter
as well. And also those two suits, like Enrique's suit is so long, and that's a very 80s thing. Like it goes down halfway down your thigh and it's way too much fabric, but it's like Michael Jordan. You're just wearing this huge boxy suit. Miami is a very 80s place, right? The architecture.
That was going to be one of my picks. It's just the whole city of Miami. It just feels 80s, right?
Miami Vice.
But all of it, like the whole, like the neon lighting, the like just everything about Miami feels 80s to me every time I look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the whole vaporwave element of it. It just, you know, the fine patina of cocaine on every single surface.
Yep.
It's absolutely just, it's a city of a decade, you know?
Walt does love vaporwave.
I do love vaporwave a lot. I'm glad that you said vaporwave.
Okay,
like cocaine. But anyway,
I do like that you said cocaine. Like you're an oh hello guy. You said the cocaine. So
My answer is incidentally related to the cocaine, and it is the fact that the adversary in the film is a drug lord. That is the most all the James Bond movies, the bad guys are drug lords in the 80s. Like it's, I don't know whether it's an Iran-Contra thing. I don't know whether it's a Reagan thing. I don't know if it's the Office of Drug Interdiction. I just think that it's like very 80s that the baddies are drug dealers, which you don't, I think you stop seeing fairly soon. I think that maybe Fast and Furious, the fourth film, involves some drug running. But nevertheless, the fact that it is, you know, basically just drug lord is like drug lord is the job of the occupation that he writes on his tax forms. Yes. That is the most 80s element of this.
That's pretty good.
Import export.
Import export.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
The importance. Joe?
Other than the entire city of Miami, I have two that I really like, which is specifically the decor of the Pearl nightclub.
I'm so glad that you brought up the nightclub. The nightclub's actually really important.
No, we need to talk about the nightclub. Yes. But first, let's talk about the decor.
Proceed.
The circular plastic hanging chair, the crab throne, like the crab or octopus arm throne. This is just stuff that like is only built on cocaine in 80s. That's exactly what I was thinking.
The VIP room, like the champagne room with the tall like couches, tall backed couches.
That's what I said.
And
yeah, as I said, they're like octopus arms or like crab hand. I don't know.
They're literally chairs designed to shoot a drug lord through. They are literally the set piece for a shootout in a just like purchased and prepared for a VIP room of a nightclub in Miami where drug lords hang out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like so tacky. The tackiness really hits it.
It's like if you ever like watch like an animated, like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, and like the backgrounds are all like pre-painted, and like you see like, oh, one of the doors is very obviously like painted on as an animation cell, and you just know that somebody's going to pop out of it at some point. Those chairs are literally, you just know they're going to be used in some capacity in a forthcoming gunfight between the Federales and the bandits, you know?
And then I had a bonus one that, Kim might actually be the one to help me here.
Oh, yeah.
But something that is very specifically started in the 80s was like Logo Mania with Dapper Dan. And
Tez's
whole truck with like the Louis Vuitton like wrap on it.
Oh, you nailed it.
Very much the Dapper Dan look. So I think that that's a very 80s moment as well.
I think Tej himself is pretty.
Very
80s.
Right?
Very 80s. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
At least in this film, he evolves.
Yeah, this more so than, I mean, this is the most 80s film. This is the most 80s Tej. I also was going to say, you know, I'm surprised that no one has said the single word neon. Neon feels very 80s.
Yes.
I mean, there's vaporwave and all that stuff. But I think and also when you were talking about Enrique and Roberto, just the concept of Fonzie and Fabio, like I know the Fonzie's more 70s, but like Fabio big in the 80s, like that feels like a thing. But my number one pick for the most 80s thing is drinking a 32-ounce soda without a care in the world. Agent Dunn just being like, this is what I'm bringing to work.
Just pounding a big gulp.
Mm-hmm. It's like Gallo 32.
Mm-hmm.
What's a car?
You're right.
We don't know that yet.
No idea. Nope. It's probably like a Coke Heavy, too.
It's absolutely a Coke Heavy.
It's a Coke Heavy.
Oh, no, that's a full calorie soda.
Mm-hmm. Like literally like a 900 calorie beverage.
Just Coke Heavy. Heavy Dr. Pepper Heavy. I don't know.
97 grams of sugar.
It's just no sucralose in this. It's just sugar.
Watching this movie and watching it open with like such a long street race, like since we last recorded, Vin Diesel hit Instagram and was just like, we got the grand finale coming up. And it really made me want to see that movie open with a street race, but I don't know how it possibly could, considering
they're
all
on
of
a
our
bridge.
Main characters are in peril
right
at the end of 10. But like,
but we talked about this before, Joey. We said, what if they don't actually start the movie there and they just start it on like everybody's safe and they just ignore that we stopped on this bridge?
But still, like, doesn't it feel like these movies should open with a street race or like some kind of like?
I agree. Yes. But I'm saying I think it would be funnier for my personal enjoyment, them to just ignore and not address that they were all stranded and just be like, wow, can't believe we got out of there. Yeah. And then like that, and then it just opens with the street race and you're like, who's in these cars? And then they all step out and they're like, whew, it almost got hairy back there.
That was a crazy adventure.
Have you guys ever read like a run of comics that gets canceled in the middle of it? Like, as a comic book reader who, like, picks up floppy sometimes, this happens to you, and it's just like, man, we're in real danger, and then, like, they cut bait on the book, and it's just like, a year later, it'll be like, guess we got out of that one. And it's like, that's literally what you're describing. It's like, it's a comic book that they give up on, and then they're just like, well, we can't just, like, pretend that, like, Hulkling and Wiccan died. so we'll bring them back later and just be like, yeah, we got Harry back there in the jungle. I don't know what to tell you.
So I think that it would work. I want more surprises from Fast and the Furious, and these are the ways that I want the surprises. Like, not necessarily, like, add an actor or something like that. Like, if you're gonna go, like, to space and shit, like, then just, like, fuck with us, right?
Yeah.
Like, just send it from the, like, the beginning, and you'd be like, okay, cool. And then, like, and they just, like, all pretend, like, there was an answer to it when they do the pressers and stuff like that. They're like, yeah, it starts out real crazy.
Well, I will also mention, like, I did float an idea last time that was like, well, where do they go from here? And the answer was obviously time travel. And so if you want to have the savior of Vin Diesel falling down a dam be, then they time travel out, starting it with a street race is absolutely possible.
But then make it click and give him a remote so he can just, like, pause and rewind.
Guess you're wondering how I ended up in this position.
It would be Nas. Like, Nas would be the portal into and out of time travel.
It has to be, yeah.
Yes.
It has to be.
Vin, call us. I know I've said that many times, but Vin, we need you to call us.
We have some ideas, for sure. I definitely have some ideas. Joey, I think that you should explain to Walt and Kim Lance Barnaby, because I'm positive they don't know who Lance Barnaby is.
So behind Agent Markham and Agent Dunn in that scene where they are drinking the Gallo soda, so Joe and I have been breaking this movie down minute by minute. We did the entire first movie. We're doing the entire second movie. We have like 1 minute left until we get to the credits. Like, we are so close. And so to do each of these, we do them in our Life in the Fast Lane. We used to do it every episode, but now we do it every 3 weeks. And so I chunked them into minute long things, and Joe and I just watch these on repeat and then just talk about what we find. On the screen in that control room, control room.
There you go, Joey. Yeah.
That's why I love it so much. We were just like, what's on the screen? Because sometimes you find really interesting things.
It's just repeated, like it was like a list of crimes, and it's just like the same three things, right? Because somebody has to make this. Yeah. So you guys know this.
Some guy types larceny 5 times in a row. It's great.
Unknowingly, exactly. My tweet for the Twitter game later for BD Wapfy, like, it actually ties into not Lance Barnaby, but something on that screen.
Okay, cool.
I didn't realize it.
Okay.
But Joe and I simultaneously were just like, hold on a minute. There is an entire fan fiction script written by probably some production intern.
No.
It's a transcript of a phone call that's behind them. And we didn't expect it to actually say anything.
Uh-huh.
Alas, it does.
Expand, please.
Yeah, what's it say? What's it say?
Yeah, we have to know.
I'm sure Joey's finding it to read it to you.
I'm finding it right now.
It took a while, but we've, like, you know, and it's hard to, like, they're not in focus. So no. It took a while, but we eventually deciphered it, and the transcript is incredible.
This is amazing.
So it's in minute 83 of this movie, in case you want to play along at home. The name of that minute was, "This is Lance Barnaby from school," which is dialogue on screen behind them. "Caller, hello? Incoming call. May I speak to Marcus? Caller, this is Marcus. Who's this? Incoming caller. Hey, Marcus, what's up? This is Lance Barnaby from school. How you been doing? Caller, hey, man, you're out of the joint finally? Just legal, or am I going to have to turn you in for reward money?
Oh, no.
Incoming caller. Marcus, you never change, do you? Caller, ha ha ha, I'm serious, dude. I can't be conversing with an escaped convict. Incoming caller. Don't worry, I'm out on good behavior. If we learn from this joint that some things aren't worth getting in trouble for. Caller, good. I'm glad to hear it. So what can I do for you? Incoming caller, do you know where I can get a gun? Caller, what do you need a gun for? Question mark. I thought you had changed your ways like that. Incoming caller, I swear it's nothing like that. Once I take care of this job, I will never turn to crime again. I swear. Caller, you're stupid, man. Y-O-U-R. You're stupid, man. What if you get caught this time around? You'll never get out on parole again. Besides, what is the job anyways? Incoming caller, I'm going to kill my parole officer so I don't have to."
That's it.
Oh, my God. I also like how it started with, like, "Do you remember me? I know you from high school." It's just like, oh, I intend to murder my parole officer.
Yes, exactly. That's it. We're like, who wrote this short story?
What
who
a short
wrote this
story?
Short story? Yeah. And then
but
put this
is,
in there.
Hold on. Like, I'm going to share what this looks like. I don't know if I think VLC will probably screen share here.
Oh, my
Zoom.
God.
But, like, it's below.
Yeah.
Like, Bilkins is
how
watching the live video footage.
The acting isn't the best, by the way, for Mr. Wilkins right now. Like, this scene, if I recall correctly, is very much just like, where are they? Like, just a bunch of pickup shots.
Yes.
The log report.
But, like, you would think that, like, this text below the video has anything at all to do with the video. Yeah. And spoiler, it does not. It's just the log 213 transcription from Monday, 1403 hours, about Mark, Lance Barnaby, wanting to kill his parole officer.
Is Lance Barnaby in this movie?
No. No. That's not a real person.
But, you know, he's from school.
I want Fast 11 to be about Lance
Barnaby. There are so many things that, like, Joe's like joked about, like, oh, they're listening to us, haha. And like, sometimes you're just like, aren't they? And this, like, if Lance Barnaby comes back, like, they are.
Yeah, they have to be.
Like, that's like the telltale sign.
Because nobody remembers that in this movie. Like, nobody that worked on that movie. Like, I would love to find out who did that, but like, nobody else that worked on that movie ever looked at that screen, right? Like, I can't imagine, like, even the actors read what that said.
No, there's no way. No way. It's just someone produced it, put it up there, and then they're like, that looks nice, and that was it. That was it. You're done.
Anyways, I'm glad you guys know about Lance Barnaby now.
Thank you.
Yeah, honestly, we should be thanking you. This is very, very important. Like...
Speaking of literary accomplishments in this movie, there is a line when they're doing the race to prove to Carter that they are worthy of being hired. Roman says, "Why must I chase the cat?" Like he's a Shakespearean character or something. Is that a reference to something other than just cat and mouse? Like, is "why must I chase the cat" a reference to something specific? Or is it just like, because it seems so weirdly formal for him to say, and I don't know why he says the way he does or why he says it at all.
I have never heard that before. That being said, Roman Pierce is the name of a Shakespeare character, if I have ever heard one. That's great.
The only name
that is more a Shakespeare character than Roman is Tyrese. And so as a result, I think that it's like, it's really like, if you had told me that there's a Tyrese and Othello, I'd be like, yeah, sounds about right. Like,
definitely not a Ludacris.
Yeah, well, hey, you don't know.
Oh,
he wrote a couple of plays about like fairies and stuff. Like, you can always have. If there's a Puck, there could be a Luda, you know?
Is there... So... With, again, like, I kind of want to frame this whole lap sort of somewhat with the idea that, like, these movies are coming to a close in one way or another. Is there stuff from this movie that you liked or enjoyed or completely forgot that they included in this movie, that other than Lance Barnaby, of course, because that's obvious, that you would like to see them bring back in a future movie? Or is, like, the stuff that has been forgotten from this movie, in your opinion, best left forgotten?
I have actually precisely one of those in my notes.
Ooh, go for it.
So glad you brought that up. The one thing that I, as I was watching the movie this time, the thing that I was like, I wish they would have done this more and I wish they would bring this back, is that, you know how Orange Julius's car says Orange Julius on it?
Yes.
I wish more of the cars had their like character moniker nicknames somehow incorporated into the livery of the car. I think that's a really awesome, what do they call, like, you know how they're like, Bullet, like, to Brian, like, why doesn't Brian's car say like Bullet real big on it? You know what I mean? Just like dumb shit like this. I think
put his name on a plane.
That's what I'm. Yes, more of that. Good point. I never remembered that. It's Roman bitches. Good job.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I would like their cars to have an incorporation of their like the Dom Father. You know, like, and we would like learn these like stupid nicknames that they gave themselves too.
I like it when they add different styles of races, right? So just the down and back around the bell.
Yes, that was a good one.
This one was new, and then you're gonna get, you know, drifting in the next one, and then
whoa, spoilers!
Everything else kind of gets like, you know, it's another quarter mile race, it's straight race, or it's the Cuban mile, right? there's one circuit, but generally they're straight races. But like, if they have a chance to do another, you know, racing set piece, make it a new type of fun race that we can, you know,
like the relay style or whatever you would call this race. That was like a really fun one. I was wondering, like, I know that she retired from acting, but like, Eva Mendes is very good at this film. And
excellent in this film.
I really would have preferred to see her appear later. I think that she's also in like a very interesting role that could appear. I know that she's appeared in like File Photographs in future films.
She pops into the credit scene in 5 to say to The Rock, "Look who's back." And it's, she puts a picture of Letty on the desk. But like,
That's all of it.
45 seconds in the rest of the franchise.
I mean, good for her. Because isn't she dating Ryan Gosling? Aren't they together?
Married.
They're basically, kids. I don't know if they're married, but they're, they have kids.
Don't want to put a name on it. If they haven't put a name on it, we don't have to. But like, I mean, listen, that's a good life. Like, that's great.
I think so too,
but I don't know, like, I think that she's just I think that she's a wonderful actress, and I think that she's particularly like a standout actress. I think that she's like some of the best acting in the film, I think I would argue. I felt
I would agree.
Yeah. But that would be my only one. And I know that there's other like concerns beyond simply these films that she obviously has kind of stepped back from the world anyway. But yeah, no, I mean, like she was just really kind of a standout. I dug her a lot.
Cam, is there something about this movie that you'd want to see come back?
On that note about putting racers' names on their cars, I like that they like develop just briefly the racers in this film. In the first one they do too with Ja Rule and everybody, but like you get to know them quickly, and you know I want to see those characters come back because they you start to learn what like drives them, you know, you get it immediately as they get to the line and everyone's talking shit, and you learn about Suki, and then you learn about the other two who are on line with them, and then they like when the guy who's in last goes oh hell no and doesn't jump the bridge with everyone, it, like that's you're learning about his character. There's so much more of these side quests. Suki, no.
She's great too. I don't know. That's a great look.
We've been calling for the return of Suki
on
record for years.
Yeah.
She hasn't been killed. She has like nothing has happened to her. Like there's no reason why Suki cannot come back. And we also have postulated that she will like they'll redo the scramble at the end of these movies, essentially.
And she'll just be there.
And she'll be in there. Like just a brief cameo, but you'll be like, Suki's back.
Like an Avengers Endgame, she has help and just Suki is there.
Like that would be great. I would like to see the characters come back, but also just the concept of having these like a very like video pick, choose your character video game street racers.
Yes,
is fascinating.
It is very.
The problem
SSX
is we've gotten
tricky.
Too big.
Yeah,
we've gotten too big. So I don't think that like you know these movies are now like 2.5 hours each.
Conservatively.
Conservative. Yeah. And like, and we're focused on like just the family because everyone's in the family now. So I think this is part of the things we lost as they get bigger, right? So,
yeah.
Exactly. I agree with you though. I do love the small minutia characters, Hector, these kind of people for sure.
It's like the street level villains that Spider-Man fights.
I mean, it sounds like we're getting to a part of this where it's like Walter's D&D moment, which is that this is a very D&D movie. I'm completely convinced that this is a D&D flick because. They level up a little bit. You and I were talking a little bit before, but Ryan is like good at cars now. Not that he was bad at cars, but like pretty good at driving right now, right?
Yeah, he put all
the
his
Buster became a gearhead
driving. Yeah.
That was
well. Can we share a very D&D naming convention that one of our listeners and patrons, Wes Hanson, came up with? He coined the term Automancer, which is the more time you spend in on with touching cars, the more you level up.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Like it's like you become attuned to the magical weapon, right? That you become better at, you know, specific vehicles. I also like because again, like you know, we see a lot of people once and then never again, and it's just like my theory on this film is that this is the D&D game that happens after you get like a really good D&D game with a group, and then it just seems like you're never gonna get them back together all at the same time, and so you got the DM who's interested and like one guy, and then you do your own little side thing for a while, like and maybe like other guys can kind of come in and play a little bit, and then like after you're like that felt good, right? And then you're like that felt real good, and like maybe you're just like we should do this again, but let's like kind of bring it back to the old game at some point, and then that's gonna happen in a few movies, but for this moment, this is basically just like. Scheduling conflicts are the bane of the film industry and the Dungeons and Dragons industry, and this is what we're dealing with right here. They were like, we got a good game here, but honestly, listen, I know that Vin's he got the new job and he's working the night shift on Mondays, so I don't know what to tell you.
Wait, so in this D&D envisioning of the franchise, which I think is very obviously spot on, is Vin or Dom or Mark Sinclair himself, is he the DM or who is the DM of this?
No, he is
Mark
not
Sinclair.
DM. Mark Sinclair is the DM. But Vin Diesel is the player.
Like, yes. Yeah.
And Dom is a character.
Yeah, player character. Correct. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. The level 8, you know, elf mage, that kind of thing. Yeah.
So Mark is like throwing a curveball here, like a plot twist. Like, we are removing this character from the game for a little while.
He's too good. He's leveling up in Mexico. He's doing a side quest. Boy, like, I don't know what to tell you. We got to put him on ice. And, like, you know, it's absolutely. You know, obviously, you know, in real life, he had nothing to do with this film, if I recall correctly, because he was no longer interested in participating in this particular franchise at this moment. But
yeah, and then he only comes back because he gets the rights to Riddick, which is also even a more D&D-ass franchise than this.
Again, like, so obviously this clicks into place, I think, probably around film 4. But for the time being, I am just going to mess around and say, like, yeah, no, this is basically what happens when your main D&D game doesn't happen and you get so restless that you do a side D&D game and everybody's just, you know, this was a good vibe. We'll continue this forward.
So this is like your buddy Paul is like, I got to do something.
Like, I really want to do this. I kind of dug the character. I felt like I didn't really understand how to play a rogue last time, but I read up on it and now I know what sneak attack does. And I'd like to maybe take another run at this. And if you could get some of the other guys over, we could absolutely, you know, you have your friend who's the wizard, you know, Tej, and then maybe, you know, we can do some other stuff too. But like, I just think I finally understand what sneak attack does and I think I know how to do it. And so like, that's when you, What class is Roman?
The bard, right?
He's a face. Yeah, absolutely. He's got to be. If he's not a bard, maybe Pally. I don't know. But either way, he's definitely he's dumping everything into charisma and like int. Nope. Wiz. Absolutely not. Like, yeah, it's really just everything else is a dump stat except charisma. So he's good.
Well, it still is so funny to me that like, and I think it is the joke that the entire franchise is built around. He's the one who can like sweet talk anybody.
Yeah.
And that's put to the test twice. It's once in Fast Five when they're in the prison or they're in like the police impound thing. He has to like sneak the thing in.
Yes, yes.
Fails spectacularly. And then also in Fury 7 at the birthday party. And he also pretty much fails spectacularly. Like he is good at one thing and the franchise twice is like, no, he's not.
Yeah, he gets to that party and it's like roll for performance, right? Yeah. And yeah, no, he failed.
It's great. And like the thing that I love about this franchise is like I had thought about, I feel like I talked to you about this, is like you could hypothetically adapt the Fast and the Furious franchise as a D&D actual play podcast.
One of our patrons is scripting a Fast and Furious Dungeons and Dragons for us.
I love it. Because imagine just like,
the Discord.
So I'm gonna I'd like to drive my car into the boat. It's like, I don't know, man, like, you'd have to roll really high to do it. I got a 20. Okay, great, you drive your car into the boat, congratulations. You nailed it. Oh Jesus Christ. Like, it's literally just like that's how this like franchise works. Like
he rolled a real die right there.
Yeah, I did. We were in my office, and obviously I have a coffee
You were like
cup.
Happy Gilmore. You had a, like,
he has,
a pocket no, he has
odd, I have a yeah. coffee cup full of dice.
He has a D20 on him at all times.
I'm going to roll stealth to put it back. And I got a 1, so you see very quickly on the way back over there. Anyway, yeah.
Is there anything about this movie on the other side of that coin that you are so mercifully thankful that they just left in Miami, that they never returned to, that you're just they tried a thing? It maybe worked for this, but I'm glad they never went back to it.
I have one, but if anyone... Okay, okay.
Go for it. Please.
Fine, I'll keep talking. I think that the villain is very weak in this film.
Okay.
I think that this film suffers... he's not seen Chewie enough. I think that he's in a different film. I think that he's in a different kind of Miami cop movie, essentially, where he's a very kind of straightforward killer, whereas I think that, like, you need to be kind of a Batman villain to succeed in these franchises. And I feel like, you know, for its faults, I think that the first film had very good villains where they, you know, you had, you know, very intimidating and also obviously very, like, you know, they were worthy of fear. And I think that, like, obviously in this one, I just didn't get that as much. And I think that they do fix that down the line, though.
Well, it feels like he threatens a lot,
yes.
Which makes you not threatening because you're right. Just constantly telling someone what you're going to do to them.
You're not afraid of rat bucket?
But he does. So he does the rat bucket. She does the rat bucket to the cop. And then he threatens his children. He's like, oh, I will kill your children. And then he looks over to the two of them and he says, hey, if you do anything, I'm going to kill you. And then he accosts Ava Mendez in the hallway, and she says, if you touch another man, I'll kill you. And then, like, that's, like, it's two in one dimension. Like,
a lot of talking.
Just a lot of talk. Blah, 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 yep. Blah, 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 blah. The rat didn't really do anything. Come on, man.
What if he just, like, came out and just, like, shot someone off the rip? And was like, too much talking, bang. Yeah, I mean, like, would that have been better for you?
Yes. It just would have made him, like, more of a threat. I mean, like, he's a drug lord who seems shockingly pacifist. Like, he doesn't, like, he obviously does, like, the rat thing. But it's just like, I don't know, man. Like, I didn't get the vibe that you were very serious about that. Bargain Bin Mick Foley didn't look very scared that you were doing that. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, so on that topic, do you think he will return? Because the end of the movie is just like, he'll be back. And he has not come back. I mean, Cole Hauser may have... Not that you could really outgrow one of the biggest film franchises in the world, but he's also now part of one of the biggest TV franchises in the world, and part of Yellowstone. Do you think Cole Hauser will return as Carter Verona?
I think he could. I think that, like, it would have to be, like, a very much, like, I can see that happening. Like, just being like, we've assembled the baddest villains of this universe to take this crew down. because, like, you know, but I also think that it has been 2 decades since this film came out, and I don't know if you can go that far back into the history. I think that they're far more comfortable when they do flashbacks just inventing the fact that Vin Diesel has a brother. Like,
well, I will say, so I was Googling, when I was looking for a tweet for this, I was looking just on Twitter for Carter Verone, just searching Carter Verone. I found out that, like, we are kind of the only people who talk about Carter Verone.
Really?
Like, we just tweet about Carter Verone fairly. But then the other big contingent is, I can't believe whatever his character name is on Yellowstone is also Carter Verone. Like, there's just, like, there's a distinct, like, people being like, I can't believe that movie I watched 20 years ago was the same guy. Like, there's two people tweeting about Carter Verone. It's us and it's those people. Like, that's it. Like, that's, like, the, I mean, people are tweeting about Cole Hauser, but, like, the Carter Verone character,
specifically.
Two camps.
Yeah. I mean, now that he runs Etion, we'll see.
I want to see him come back, but I want to see him be like, I'm out of the game. Like, yeah. I have a convenience store now, a daughter in school.
Hey, brother, I found Christ inside the camp. It's like, and like, I'd like to minister.
You find a poot in the Foot Locker at the end of The Wire.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah, like, not even like, I haven't flipped to the cops. I'm running a Foot Locker. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, he's like,
I also don't, I don't want to gloss over Kim's subtle way of, I'm assuming every episode going to do this, like, saying a character we have not seen again is now running Etion. We have Johnny Tran running Etion, now we have Cole Hauser running Etion.
Oh, yeah.
So, Carter Verone running Etion. So, Kim's just, like, throwing darts, and one of them is going to be
probably the next one. I mean, it's, probably the Tokyo one. Drift one seems right.
Sometimes we do stuff like that, and then, like, our listeners will write in, and they'll be like, you guys fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
And we'll be like, we said everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, at some That's point, at any
Our
point,
insanity we, board we said, is everyone.
Yes, exactly. And they were mm-hmm. like, you guys got it. It was them. Yeah. And we were like, I guess we said that.
I will also say, the next one we're doing is not Tokyo Drift. We go chronologically on this podcast.
Oh, right.
So we're going to go to Fast and Furious number 4 next. We're going to save Tokyo Drift. Because also, what we've found mm-hmm. is that doing Tokyo Drift chronologically mm-hmm. makes it hit even more, because, like, at that point you're a couple movies into the 2 hour 215 220 sure. long movie, and then you get a breezy Tokyo Drift and you're like, this is
like the greatest movie.
It's amazing, it's insanely good.
Yes, it's definitely that. You watch it, you're like okay, we just, like, saved the world, and then it's like we're in a Japanese high school.
Yep.
Hmm.
I also think that the most memorable music, obviously, Danza Kuduro is not strictly a Fast and Furious thing, which is why I'm not counting it, but, like, just, like, the original songs that are, like, yeah, that's a good song. Like,
Teriyaki Boys.
Yeah, good stuff.
Soundtrack is incredible.
Yep. Yes.
I have a very important question for all three of you, because I think the answer for me is probably not, but not because of the part at home. Could you, if you got a phone, if you're, okay, you step out of the shower,
sure.
you're in a towel, walking around your apartment, yeah. you get a phone call, yes. be here in 4 minutes is a race.
Never.
Could you get to wherever that is in 4 minutes?
No.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. I would race.
I live in New York, baby.
I gotta be at the race.
Yeah. Also, here's the thing. You're not obeying stoplights when you're getting to the race. Like,
true.
You know?
It's also the middle of the night, right?
It's also Miami.
It's still Miami. That's, I think that, like, there's a, there
you think
gotta
you
be
use
traffic
NOS
somewhere.
To get to the race?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
On time.
Yeah. Well, but then you'd have to refuel with NOS when you get to the race. But yeah, no, you just,
I can't get my shoes tied in 4 minutes.
I could get into my car from, like, in towel to in car in safely under a minute. But then I can't get to wherever in 3 minutes.
Yeah, but, like, if it's, you know, in the Jersey Shore, when we realize years and years later that the t-shirt shop is, like, connected to the house that they were living in.
And they were always, like, late
and
like, missing work.
Late, missing work. What if, like, the race was just down the street from Tesh's garage?
I would just live near the garage. I would put my garage near where cars need repair, which is a race. Like, right? Like,
well, yeah, because isn't he, like, he's staying in Tej's boat, right?
Yes.
Or no, he's staying in
No, Tej. He's staying in the guest room.
Wouldn't it be really funny if, like, the reason that he can get there so quickly is that we've never noticed it, but Brian does not know how to tie his shoes, so he simply wears the Velcro.
He wears Velcro, yeah.
An amazing car driver.
I think he's wearing Converse throughout this one. You can slip those on.
Yeah, you can slip those on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. I don't know if you necessarily want to drive with loose shoes on.
Yeah, but that's the Converse.
Way worse than no shoes.
It's the All-Star low tops.
But he got iconic. There in 4 minutes. He can get out of the car and then tie his shoes.
I will.
Yeah, while they're all arguing about whether they want to kick it a nickel, he can be like, oh, I gotta tie my shoes.
We are obviously, do you guys ever drive your cars not wearing shoes. Like, just like, just,
yeah.
It's nice. It's like, I don't
it's
have
delightful.
A it's like charming. It's really good. Kim, do you ever do that?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't drive.
What?
New York City, baby.
Yeah. I could... Never get a license, but you love Fast and the Furious.
You guys come to Connecticut, and I'll let you barefoot drive around.
You know, like the ridges in the gas pedal on the barefoot?
Yeah, it is. It feels really nice.
You ever,
but
like,
the other time, it's like,
do you ever big toe?
That's what I was just about to say. If you accidentally big toe it, you do get a little freaked out for a second.
It's you feel one with the automobile. You feel genuinely like Optimus Prime, that this is just how he feels all the time.
There's a weird sect of like car enthusiasts in Japan that are really excited about like hybrids. And so their goal was to maximize gas mileage. Like, they've like have pushed it as hard as they can. And one of their things was they only drove with their big toe for the most feel, to use as little gas
possible. I also like how, like, it's basically just like the speed runners, but like it's just like that. But like, for a gallon of gas, like, how long can you make it last?
That's exactly what they were doing. Genius. Yeah. They were like trying to get as maximum gas mileage as they could, just like as like a fun time hobby.
That sounds amazing.
Also, not to plug Walt's newsletter again, but my favorite thing that Walt has covered in the last, I don't know, forever, is the Super Mario Maker countdown.
I am obsessed. I've never
is it ending
that.
Tonight?
No. So here's the thing. So for those of you who have lives and don't follow the speedrunning community, Super Mario Maker.
We can also just read a concise newsletter every morning for over a cup of coffee.
You should do that. It's called Numlock. It's available at numlock.com, spelled in the conventional sense. But the
You own the .com now.
Oh, damn straight. I bought the .com. That was an investment, but one that I'm very proud of. So Super Mario Maker was this video game on the Wii U, and they're shutting down the Wii U servers on April 8th. And with it, every Mario Maker level that has ever been made and uploaded to the servers is going to be wiped out on the plane. Now, here's the thing, fellas. A few years ago, they realized when they stopped Mario Maker that the total number of levels uploaded was in the millions, but several of them had been unplayed. That there were something on the order of like 50,000 unbeaten levels that had been uploaded to Super Mario Maker.
Unplayed or unbeaten or both?
Unbeaten. They had not been beaten yet. They were possible to beat, otherwise they would not have been allowed on there, but they were unbeaten as of yet. And so over the past 3 years, a dedicated and loosely co-aligned group of you know, speedrunners has been chewing through this. And as of about 2 weeks ago, they were down to 100. As of today, I think they're down to like 4. And there are 4 left. And so genuinely, we're recording this Wednesday, March 13th at 8 p.m. And if, you know, any minute they could get it, but at the same time, 2 of them are really, really, really hard. And so it's a race against time between now and April 8th when they start ripping the cords out of the walls at Nintendo HQ, between whether or not they're actually going to be able to beat Super Mario Maker. And I love it.
That's really cool.
I'm obsessed
with
the story.
That's a really fun story. It's an excellent story.
I haven't felt this way since Twitch plays Pokemon. I'm not going to lie. This is one of my favorite things.
Because, like, yesterday, like, Walt gave an update, or was it Monday or two? Like, one day this week he gave an update. It was like, there's, like, 100 levels left. Yeah. And then this morning, it was like, there's 10 levels left. I was like, holy shit. Like, what
they
happened?
They are chipping
the
away at these. Yep.
These are, like, the greatest Mario players ever, too.
They really
are.
Like,
a leaderboard of how many they've knocked out? Like,
yeah. No, they have all people. They have all. They do have a leaderboard on their site. Yeah. No, absolutely. It's called a 0%, Z-E-R-O, and then just the percentage sign. That's the group that's doing it. And I would absolutely encourage you to look it up. I think a few folks are streaming it on Twitch. I don't know. I just want to see it happen. I think it's really cool.
It's cool. It's a really cool community thing. I like that. Yes.
Going back to the street racing for a second, you said that it makes sense for Tej, if he's organizing the street race, to have the race near his garage so that if cars wreck, they can just go there.
It's a business. It's a business to design. He's trying to...
But does it make sense to host a criminal enterprise like right near property you own?
No, I don't want the cops near my house like that. I agree, Joey. That was my first concern.
But he knows everybody. He knows the cops, too.
And here's the thing. Maybe he's not organized. There's this thing called the Cannonball. You guys ever hear this?
Yeah,
it's the one. It's
Cannonball Run.
Yeah. So, but it's like this, like, illegal street race. Basically, yes. How quickly can you get from this garage on the east side of New York City to the Portofino Hotel in Los Angeles? And like, for a while, this was like this big thing. It would take like 2 days, and then they got it down a lot. And then what happened was they set a record
not Cannonball. Gumball.
Is it the Gumball, or is it
Gumball Rally?
Interesting.
Yes, Gumball.
Yeah.
Or Cannonball Run. That's a different.
So the original
Cannonball
Run
the movie. Yes.
Was in the
70s. Based on this.
And so right, here's the thing. Yeah. I looked this up. And so, all these illegal street races across the country, it's great. But Cannonball Run was originally sponsored by Car and Driver officially. And so Car and Driver was basically sponsoring an illegal street race for 4 years. And then presumably somebody in accounting was like, fellas, we can't do this anymore. And so maybe that's what's happening at the garage, where the garage started sponsoring an illegal street race. And they're like, we can't do this anymore. But still, nevertheless, every Wednesday, you know, they all gather outside Tej's just because you can't stop, you know?
I love it.
Is it Gumball or is it Cannonball? I can't find it now. There's two, but I don't
remember
which it is.
There are two.
Walt's probably right.
But here's a question. While Joe looks that up,
yeah.
Or none of that, it's an observation. So we mentioned, I think, last time that we've been watching the show Icons on Earth. And in the most recent episode we watched, which is episode 5 of 6, they talk about how...
It is Cannonball.
Hell right. Yeah.
In yep. PG-13 movies, you can't show innocent people dying. Because apparently that adds... weight and gravitas, and so like if you see innocent people dying, it becomes an R-rated thing or whatever.
I remember I didn't develop empathy until age 14, so I completely understand why that's possible.
When you were an adult, when you had fully grown feelings. Yes.
Proceed.
So they show like in Fast and Furious 6 when there's the tank on the bridge,
yeah.
Like people are diving out of their car before their car gets run over because like you can't just see an innocent person die.
Yeah.
But in this movie, a big rig straight up rolls over a car that's in the race.
Yes.
And I guess vying to work for a drug lord does not make you innocent, but it right. is just also wild to see someone just get obliterated into a paste in this movie.
It gets me every single time.
Whereas dude. A couple of movies later, like, we've got to show people, like, diving out of the way in coffee shops because the safe is tumbling through Rio and, yeah. like, jumping out of cars before the
tank. Or in the last one, here, just like... no civilians were injured in this giant yeah. bomb explosion guys, that took guys, over.
This guy is a goo.
Did you guys not see, like, the 80-yard in, like, I litter all the time, and then you just get tanked by this thing? Yeah. I agree that that's probably the case. I think that maybe that was a driverless car, or maybe if you work for a drug lord, you kind of lose some of your moral authority, perhaps, but... that's a moment, definitely. Like, yeah,
it is a crazy thing to happen in any movie, let alone like in like no one blinks an eye. Carter
doesn't
say where that guy go.
The rest of that whole mm-hmm. scene.
Nope. And we totally don't address it. We just keep pushing, and we're good. Then we shoot at cops, yep. So we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Nailed it.
So easy.
Kim, I know that you had a thought. Like, you know, I was talking about my connection that this is just all Dungeons and Dragons,
right?
And you have a different.
So like I brought up pro wrestling in the first one, so I yes. feel like it's important to continue to bring up pro wrestling throughout this process.
Okay, now we go to your pro wrestling minute with
so,
Kim.
Okay, the down and back race,
sure,
right, where mm-hmm. they win the two cars, go around the barrel, come back. Obviously it's a tag team thing. We know this. I think Tej literally says, like, he says tag team style. So, yes, it's an obvious tag team thing. Do any of you know what a hot tag is?
What's a hot tag, yeah. Cam?
A hot tag is when the good guy team, one of them is losing. They're getting beat up. And then
okay, yes, yes.
he tags in his partner.
Uh-huh.
And then his partner comes in and just starts, he's got so much energy and just starts going crazy and defeats the bad guy.
Like both? Or just the one?
Just the one that's in there, okay. right? It could be both. Could be yeah. both, of course. But no, when Paul Walker sets off...
Was that a hot tag?
Yeah, oh, that was totally... that was such a hot tag. And he just lines up with the bad guy, just like, saying, come on, let's see if you got the balls. And then, oh, so good. That's a hot tag.
Both of the guys that they, like, raced against did kind of look like they were in the middle of a divorce.
They were...
Kind of looked like they really needed that car.
Their partners were with them.
Wait, to each other, or were they divorcing each
know.
Other or other
no,
people?
They're with women who maybe are.
That doesn't mean that they're not they're together.
Gumas. No, they also needed.
Call them Gumars.
You think that they? You would assume, like, they would assume that they were going to win, right? So they do uh-huh. need to bring four total people to drive the cars away.
That's a really good.
That's
point.
That's true. This I've thought about this too.
Yeah, the logistics of this are very weird. Yeah.
So they did bring
you
them.
Need
yeah.
the extra people. Yeah.
Because it is funny when they drive away and just all four of them are just standing on an empty road with no cars. It's just like, yeah, you guys lost. Would it surprise you to learn that they needed an extra action scene and had no money? They're like, what could we write for basically $0 uh-huh. and just like driving down our cone and coming back? Like, that's
like,
why
we
that
had one street really? That we can easily. Yeah, they mm-hmm. did it like in like last minute, too. It was like they watched the movie and they were like,
there's not enough action.
There's not enough racing or like in action. So they were mm-hmm. like. We could just do like a down and back race and it'll be yep. like quick in one night, and they just shot it in one night and they were like, cool, and then added it in.
That's amazing. That like I also those actors that they took cars from definitely seem best available. And like it
oh wait, one of them is a stunt driver.
Really? Good for right? them.
Yeah. Not Fabio, the other
get
one.
Get that Fonzie. SAG money.
Fonzie. Yeah, Fonzie is like he's a stunt driver, and he also comes back in one of the movies, doesn't he, Joey? He's a brief cameo in like 5 or something like that.
Give me my car back. I think so. That sounds right.
Yeah.
I love that.
Obviously, because he's on set, because he's a stunt.
That's also a really good point of like this could you could make a car chase very cheaply. Now that I think about it, like
yeah. With like the right equipment and just like a street.
And if you're not crashing one of them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I mean, not to be like, you know, this is made in the edit, but like you can make cars go faster in the edit. Like you can add louder noises to it. Like if I like, you know, like took a video of a Nissan Stanza going down my street, and then in post I sped it up by 1.2% and I added a lot of loud noises, race car noises coming out of it, like that would probably, you know, dispel the illusion and like give you the chance of like, yeah, that's a fast car race going on. That's an interesting that you could actually just add an action scene really cheap with no choreography.
I mean, they already do with NOS, right? Yeah. Suddenly it's the Millennium Falcon.
That's dumb. Do they do that in future movies? I forgot that happened.
To make them look like they're going fast. What? The Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, they do like
hyperspace. Oh, like they threw the engine like the blur.
Yeah.
No,
we get sad that they don't do this.
Is that a John Singleton special?
So there's like two elements to that. There is the blurring, and there's also the like
through the engine.
NOS get injected through the engine, and that comes back. Yes. But the blurring is kind of not
lost
really.
To time. Yeah,
it's only in Miami. Lena, you get the blur is only in Miami. Mm.
Or it's only in 2003.
Definitely.
Is Miami any different, right?
So no.
Yeah. So I grew up in, I went to high school in Tampa.
Woo!
And, okay. You know, we'd go to Miami sometimes. I was in high school in 2003.
When your team,
Miami,
your team played the other team, like when the local Swamp Rats played the
so they were, it was like that, yeah. Of course, back in 2003.
Hyalaya, right?
I feel like obviously it's changed a little bit. Things have been gentrified and everything, but like the vibe is exactly the same.
Miami's just been stuck in the 80s forever. Like, that's what I was saying. It's the most 80s part of this. It's just like, it just exists in the 80s at all times.
Yeah. And not because of like NIMBY reasons, just because like, no, it's just we nailed it once. We don't need to change.
Yeah. We like this style. We like this color. Like,
well,
everything's good.
As a testament to Joe's research abilities, as we've been breaking this movie down minute by minute, whenever there's a location, he will find it in a Google Maps. And it's amazing how much of the stuff you can still find based on like existing landmarks in the movie. Like, things change. But, like, it's largely the same, right? Like, it's...
What's the kid on Twitter that, like, finds the place in a picture? I'm, like, a really shitty version of him.
And only when related to the past.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. The one that's like, can you find my
Geo-guesser.
Mom in the...
Yeah,
in like, I'm, like, a really shitty geoguesser.
I do want to point out something that I noticed in this film, which is that the outcome that has changed for our heroes is that they have stolen some money from the police, I guess is how you would put it, right? Like, they've borrowed some evidence for their own personal use. And I will say two things. One, it looks like they stole a lot of money. And two, it's like their dreams of what to do with the money are a little bit suspect, because they're like, finally, we can open a garage together, right? Like, that's what they say that they're going to do. And I have two problems with that, which is, like, number one, like, if your life's goal is to open a garage in Miami, like, I don't know, man. I think that you could just get a small business loan for that. Like, mm-hmm. I don't really think that there's too much trouble here. Like, you could probably, like, get some financing from the local bank.
See what you can get.
Yeah. The second thing is, like, their friend owns a garage, right? Like, their friend is in the garage business. Like, and they was like, oh, finally, we have enough money to open up a competitor to our friend and take business away from our friend. Like, that's just kind of a dick move. Like, why not just buy into his garage?
Very true. But I'm imagining that they were talking about, like, putting a garage in Barstow, which it probably screws a different friend of theirs, but at the same time, not specifically Ted.
Well, no, they talk about how much they love Miami. They don't want
to
leave Miami.
He doesn't want to go back to Barstow. I mean, I ain't going back to Barstow.
Do they go back to Barstow?
No. Don't,
also, it only takes three movies for Roman to be like, you're a millionaire now, and your dreams open up a small business. Like, he's talking shit at the end. Like, he's just like, why do you want to have a day job, right? Like, you want
to,
like...
It's very hard to own a small business. Like, why are you, like, you're going to spend all your...
Very hard.
Yeah.
Look, we just saw Dom stressing over owning the Toretto's Market and Cafe in the first movie, one movie ago.
Yeah, he had a full head of hair when he opened that, man. I don't know what to tell you. It's a very stressful environment.
Imagine, like, driving a Honda Civic into Tyrese's garage and be like, "Hey man, can you help me with my carburetor?" And
I'm
Roman's just like, "No."
No, I don't know how to do that. I don't know anything about cars. I just had a bunch of money and I decided to invest in a fucking Superfund site and decided to put it in the Everglades because why not? Like,
honestly, the Everglades is probably an underserved area for garages.
Yeah. A lot of fanboat repair stuff up there, but not a lot of actual
JW
garage.
Stillwater.
Yeah.
People definitely repair their own fan boats.
You don't go to a professional to repair a fan boat. You don't even go to a professional to buy a fan boat. You make your own fan boat.
Kim does not drive cars or fan boats because he lives in New York City.
Correct.
I would actually go on a fan boat with you if you...
Have you been on a fan boat before?
No.
Again, Florida.
I live in New York. Like, yeah, right.
There are fan boats in the Everglades. We can go.
We can go. Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
Sounds fun. Alligators, like, you know? Fun.
Another like, you know, CinemaSin style, like, hey, why did they do that? I do like how the idea is like, okay, Brian had a job as a big city cop in Los Angeles, yeah, and then lost that job. And, yeah, like, then he, instead of, you know, he goes to just kind of hang out in Miami and race cars. Whereas, like, if you lose a job as a big city cop, even under extreme circumstances where your entire record is blemished and you never ever get to work again in the city, you still get to be the chief of police in a rural town in America. Like, the retirement plan for corrupt, shitty cops is just be the head cop in a smaller, shittier town. Like, I don't know why that's not this movie. I don't know why he's racing fucking cars in Miami when he could just, like, move anywhere in the country that has a population lower.
Well, wait, have you guys watched the 6-minute turbocharged prelude to Too Fast, Too Furious?
I don't think I've had the pleasure, no.
I have, yeah.
So it is available online. If you can't find it, let us know. We will send it to you. It explains sort
it's
of.
It's just
kind
all
of,
on YouTube, too, by the
it's
way.
It's also on YouTube why Brian is in Miami.
Uh-huh.
It's 6 minutes. There's no dialogue. Minka Kelly makes a cameo. but it explains why he's in Miami, kind of. Not at all. Like, not, there's not a satisfying answer here, but, like, it explains at least how he's in Miami.
Yeah.
3 minutes of it, I think, is just a map that's just, like, moving, like, you, yeah, see the car moving on the map.
No. Like Indiana Jones, but, like, worse than Indiana Jones for somehow.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just him driving through the South and getting, saying, sorry, we already hired our local, you know, corrupt police officer. Just go to the next town over. Maybe they'll hire you.
I will say, before the next episode, which is going to be, again, Fast and Furious number 4, if you have not watched it yet, make sure that you watch Los Bandoleros, which is the 20-minute short film directed by Mr. Vin Diesel, Ooh. Mr. Mark Sinclair, because it is maybe our favorite Letty, and it's great. And I, if you, again, you can't, that's harder to find than Turbocharged Prelude, because I think people actually, because Vin Diesel made it and, like, has pride about it, so he's not just, like, letting people put it on YouTube. But it's definitely worth watching, because it's a very cool, adds actual story beats to the Fast and Furious franchise in a way that the Turbocharged Prelude does not at all.
I love that.
So do either of you, or Joe, do any of you have any final thoughts about Too Fast before we play a game? Not to end it short, but...
I cut all of mine in, my friend. I am good.
Kim, Walt,
I only thoughts? Have one thing, which is I don't think that we as a society appreciate how good of a title Too Fast, Too Furious is.
Oh, so just amazing.
Oh, so they've... So we saw, like, recently, what was it, Joey? Some Screen Rant, something along those lines, that they had titleized the final film as... FX small
no,
I
fast 11 XI with a lowercase I. We're like, ooh, if that was a typo, it's an amazing typo, because,
yeah,
that's a new way that we want to see it stylized.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I think that, like, you know, it's a bit of a joke, not gonna lie, but Too Fast, Too Furious is really good. Like,
it's so good.
Like,
I agree.
Whatever, like, night of, like, Hollywood cocaine use ended in, like, all right, this is what we had scrawled on the whiteboard in the morning, boys, we're calling it Too Fast, Too Furious. Like, whatever that happened, like, what a contribution to our society.
Like, Electric Boogaloo gets the headlines. Yes. Too Fast, Too Furious is,
it's very
a
good
classic.
It's bottled lightning, and nobody can ever do it again. So I don't know, it's great.
Yeah, you can't do it and not think of two. That you're right. Like, you can't do, like, if you do any number word again,
yeah,
it's just like, oh, you just stole Too Fast. It's done.
They have tried. They tried to do that with the Fantastic Four movie, where they just, like, crammed a four in the middle of it.
Four,
right?
Fantastic four, stick.
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, it doesn't work. And, like, I think that people realize the lightning that they had bottled, and you know, some people have dared, but not many have pulled it off.
Well, David Fincher somehow got away with Sissé Evan.
That's,
but, like, that doesn't make any
that's
sense.
That's a very stupid name for a film. Like, yeah. It's not great.
George Costanza would have liked it.
Yeah, I got one more thing here. I'm sure you guys have talked about, I said forget about it, cuh. And I noticed for the first time, I didn't realize this, like,
like Roman calls him cuz first. There's a scene, yes, like they're in the race. He initiates the calling each other cuh. That kid gives Paul Walker slightly more permission.
Slightly more, yes.
But I'm still not. I never noticed that Tyrese debuted the cuh in
Fast. Did you not exist in the cuh time?
The cuh.
This was like a big
cuh time. But it's like
big cuh time. This was like a huge rage of like all 13-year-olds in this precise moment in history.
It is not their word to use, though.
No.
Oh no, but I mean, it just existed, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't think that the 13-year-olds were trying to appropriate. They were just lost children.
No, they were just doing what 13-year-olds do.
Yeah,
which is
exactly.
Of course.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. They were trying to, but they definitely weren't. Yes.
I'm trying to figure out who they are. You know.
Yeah.
All right, let us play a game then. This ain't no 10-second race, a.k.a. Boy, do we have a podcast for you.
Boy, do we have a podcast for you. Come and check out our show. Yeah, yeah.
So this is where you go on Twitter.com, a.k.a. the Bird app. Find any tweet from any person.
I found one, and it's actually a very hot one.
Okay, please send it to me. Let me quickly review. We're going to see if people got points, and then we can do
true.
This episode.
Oh, yeah. So, we're going to tell them the score.
I found Kid Phantasm, CB Bruno, screw Ford v. Ferrari, the Fast and Furious, and all those other car movies. I want a full movie about this beauty. And it was a picture of the Let's Go Whalers Zamboni in the middle of a dusty field somewhere. And we said, why not both? Why not a Brass Bonanza Danza Kuduro mashup? Boy, do we have a podcast for you. We got 2 likes from Aaron Willosen and CB Bruno. I get a point. I have not gotten a point in
welcome
so
to
long.
The board, my friend.
It's been a long road without points, my
to
friend.
See you again.
Joe, you found Megan McMahon at Steel Magnolia at Vin Diesel. She tweets, my mom claims to be the biggest Fast and Furious fan, but didn't even watch the new movie today. She's supposed to. Told her I was going to snitch. And you said, we said, well, Meg, your mom is still part of the hashtag family. Girls, do we have a podcast for you? We got 1 like from Aaron Willosen. So, Joe, no points there, unfortunately.
Oh.
Walt, you found Disbussing Film at Disbussing Film, the Disgusting Film parody
yes.
site. Vin Diesel's planned a campaign for the Academy Award for Best Actor for his role as Dom Toretto in Fast X. Quote, yeah. I've welcomed so many people to my family over the years. Now it's time for the Oscar. Welcome me to his.
It's a really good tweet.
And we said, we also think it's bullshit this didn't happen. Boy, do we have a podcast for you. It got 5 likes, but
yes.
From you, from Aaron, from Randy Carter, from Nick, and from Sexbot. So, no.
Hey, do we count Sexbots or people too?
Stephanie Adams at Stephanie A18873 at girlwaitu.com/ID887312 in case you want to check out this totally real person.
There's a link in bio. It's fine.
You found It's Purple He's Rob welcome. At Purple Rob. Today is Dominic Toretto's favorite day in Ontario. Happy Family Day. We said Happy Family Day, Mr. Purple Rob. XOXO, love you, fam. Boy, do we have a podcast for you. Got 1 like from Aaron, so no,
let's
unfortunately.
Go.
But Walt, you sent me your tweet, so please hit us with the tweet that you found for this episode.
This one is from this afternoon.
Ooh, hot,
it is
hot.
At Extreme Wisteria, and it's being laughed at, teased, made fun of for describing the artistry of Too Fast, Too Furious, and Tokyo Drift.
Also, somebody whose private response to this tweet, and we don't know what they said, but then
no idea what they
Sky
said.
Says, it's not my fault the aesthetics were good. The plot was stupid and fun.
Sky is right. It is stupid and fun, and the aesthetics are quite good.
All
right,
so what do you want to respond? So you're right. How do you want to respond to this?
Like, not only are you right, but we could not agree with you anymore. You should check out this podcast where we talk about this exact thing. But also, you are heard in this world.
I am saying not only are you right, but we could not agree with you more. You are heard in this world. Boy, do we have a podcast for you.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Beautiful.
It's a good-looking flick, I tell you that much.
It is. Kim, you just emailed me yours. Please hit us with that one, then.
Boy, did I. This is from the Fresh Prince of Despair.
Oh, nice. Good name.
I like it.
Fridge Pants. 2 underscores. 13 films to get to know me. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Heat.
Director's Definitive Edition.
That's a good edition.
The Fast and the Furious. Too Fast, Too Furious. The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. Fast 5. Fast and Furious 6. Furious 7. The Fate of the Furious. Fast 9. F9. Sorry. F9. Fast X. Shrek 2. Entangled.
Untangled was the last one?
Just
Tangled.
Tangled.
Tangled, regular, sorry, regular Tangled. Tangled.
Yeah,
remember, she had a lot of hair.
Yes,
and
exactly.
They don't list Fast and Furious, do they not care?
No, the Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, but what about the
fourth? Oh, the fourth one. Yeah, it is.
I could not
fuck the fourth one.
It is notably not here.
Absent.
Kim, how do you want to respond to the Fresh Prince of Despair?
All caps, please. We love Tangled. And then go to space, lowercase, and a lot of those other films as well.
Perfect.
Boy, do we have a podcast for you.
I also like, in the improv sense, we did a Herald. We started with Shrek and we ended with Shrek. And somehow in the middle, we had a conversation about Fast and Furious.
We did take a long road to get there, though. Oh.
Joe, please, did you send me one on Facebook?
I did.
Please hit us with yours.
Pulisian critic, Christique, so like Christian Pulisic, I guess, something, at Guidesman with two N's. It's a quote tweet of the Ferrari France, the Scuderia Ferrari France thing, and it just has a picture of their president, John Elkann. And they quote tweeted and said, literalmente Carter Verone, Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we need to be like...
Mayor Mono.
No, yeah, it looks just like him. And boy, do we have a podcast for you, but Google translate it to French for me, please.
Is it in French? Literalmente. Isn't that Italian?
Is it? But this, it's like the Ferrari French page, though. You see what I'm saying? Like, they were following the Ferrari... So I don't know what...
Literalmente. That's Italian. It's Italian.
It has to be Italian.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Then...
Okay, so I'm gonna translate from English to Italian.
Just straight Google Translate, too. I just want to raw dog it with the...
Li somiglia proprio. Ragazzo, abbiamo un podcast per te.
Perfect. Excellente. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. God,
what a silly bit.
Importantly, the podcast is in English.
I mean, they'll figure it out. If they, like, listen or be like, what the fuck is this? Either way, I get points. I just want some just traction here, bud.
So here, I want to share my screen because there's a visual component to this. So remember we were talking about before...
Oh my God. Yes.
Lance Barnaby.
Yes.
So this is from Dates and Movies at Dates and Movies. April 12th, in 1968, Argentine-American drug lord Carter Verone at Cole Hauser was born. In 1973, fast-talking, fast-driving Roman Pierce at Tyrese is born. Instead of fighting, they should have just shared birthday cake together, hashtag Too Fast, Too Furious. And in the background of the same movie, their birthdays are the same. So someone... Either
that's really funny.
The direct, like either John Singleton or someone that they know, like their wives, their girlfriend, whoever, or just whoever's in charge of putting this together, their birthday was April 12th. And April so they're 12th. Just putting it here. Like in X-Files, like every single clock is 10:13 because that's Chris Carter's wife's birthday. And just like a shout out, like, hey, I love you. Like, here's a shout out to you. Someone's birthday of importance is April 12th. So I just saw this because like there's three sections. There's people talking about Carter Verone as us. People watch Yellowstone and then at Dates and Movies on Twitter. That's it.
Perfect.
Amazing.
That was a good round, guys. I think we all picked good tweets.
I think that was good. I feel like we got a bunch of winners up in that. I feel obviously as the winner of the most recent round that, you know, I have a lot of faith in this.
This ain't no 10-second race here. Well, we don't play every round. We're in it for the long haul.
Listen, I respect that, but with respect, I do live my life a quarter mile at a time. And so as a result, the most recent quarter mile kind of came out with me ahead.
We got
a new one coming up, but like...
Really makes sense. I'm glad you're standing by your ideals.
I have my convictions, and by the courage of my convictions, I've recently passed a quarter mile.
Beautiful.
So proud of you. What would you two like to plug in this episode? Anything of note, anything new since last time, or the same stuff as last time?
Nothing new yet. I changed jobs between the last time that we chatted in here. But TBD on when we actually launch for that. That'll be coming out shortly for what the new thing is. I think that you should buy my book. I think the reader should buy my book.
I think
that it's a good book. It's called You Are What You Watch. It's available in stores and wherever books are sold. And I know a few places it was out of stock and they did a new printing and so
good.
More stuff. Yeah,
no, that's awesome news. Congrats on that.
Yeah, no, it was good. I heard the stuff is arriving back in March, and I was like, okay, I heard. It's been pretty good. I'm doing some talks about that. If you're in Williamsburg, Virginia, I'm talking at the Ampersand Festival. But the odds that somebody listening is in Williamsburg, Virginia is rather small, just because Williamsburg, Virginia is a very small town. But hey, anybody but married people, I will be in your town soon. So yeah.
Isn't that near Jess Collins?
Is that near Lynchburg?
No, it's on the opposite end of the state.
And Virginia's weirdly big.
Big one, and it's a poorly shaped state because there's parts of it that are very, very far apart, despite it not being a particularly large state.
Yeah,
it's got a lot going on. We're all big fans, but yeah, no, that's what I got going on.
Ampersand Fest. Okay, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Oh, it's gonna be good because Cord Jefferson, who just won an Oscar, apparently also went to William and Mary, and will be there. So I will get to meet a person who I know mostly as a Gawker blogger who has made very, very, very good.
I thought, I don't know if you read Today in Tabs, Rusty's newsletter, but he talked about how, shout out to the, I want to get the verbatim because I don't want to say, but like basically everyone in Brooklyn is going to be like my friend Cord, because like he was like, just like a guy who then won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Congrats to Cord Jefferson and to the spontaneous major weather event about to occur in Brooklyn due to media and media adjacent people in mass setting the land speed record for describing someone they've met one time as, quote, my friend. So you did not say my friend. I'm not dunking you. You're just like, you know, someone that I know as a Gawker blogger. But yeah, Cord is like a guy who then, you know, won an Oscar. But that was Helena Fitzgerald on Blue Sky. Kim, what would you like to plug?
I don't think I really described what I actually do out here yet. All right. So I cover celebrity and athlete business deals for Bloomberg News and Bloomberg Business Week magazine. And a story out fairly recently on it's a profile of Stephen Curry and his brand at Under Armour. I went out to Indianapolis for the All-Star game and
cool.
Chatted with him over there.
You chatted with Steph at the All-Star? You talked to him? That's really
my
cool.
Job.
I know. That's super sick. I'm just jealous. I just wanted to hype it up for you, bud.
it's my job. Right, yeah. So, check it out. If you like that sort of those kinds of stories, please come over to Bloomberg.com and see for yourself.
Yeah, as a reminder, last time you only plugged Walt's book, which is very kind of you, but also did not help people know who you were.
Yeah, I don't want to plug my book anymore. I'm plugging the Steph Curry piece. Check out Steph Curry's article.
I still tell people about that series you did on YouTube. I don't think it was, I think you did like a handful of episodes, but like you went to the guy's Funko Pop house that was just like wall to ceiling of just all Funko Pops everywhere and just, yeah.
I think that's pretty much like there's like somebody that has like two Funkos or you have a gigantic wall of your house of them.
Yeah. It's like Lego people too.
Yes, Rachel has a ton of
basement
Legos. Yeah.
Legos.
Amen. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. I think that there's no like, oh, I have like 10. It's like, no, I'm collecting 1,000 or I have two.
No, this is $250,000 worth of Legos.
Nobody ever has like a third Funko. They either have a first, a second, or all, just the
yes,
Funko
that's
that
what I'm saying.
Up to your yard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also want to give a shout out to Walt's book and Kim's career, but also to
Kim's
patrons.
Career.
Yeah, let's go.
Career.
I got Kim's career and everything. It's crazy. Yeah.
Cassie Wilson, Nick Burris, Alex Ellen, and Justin Kleiman, Brian Rodriguez of High School Slumber Party, Wes Hampton, ooh, Jerry Robinson, Dan the Duke, Hayden Renato, Di Donato, Michael McGann, Lane Middleton, Lindsay Lewandowski, Nate Milton of the Kings of Sport, Jason Rainey, Tom Price, Mike Gallagher, Josh Buckley of Whole Lotta Wolves, Michael Moser, Christian Larson, Tara Newone, Aaron Willows, and Natalie Absolute, Randy Carter, Josh Goulart, and Jessica Collins, a.k.a. Montez. The not in William & Mary Montez. Thank you all for supporting at the $5 level or above. Next episode for us, Joe, is Little Shop of Horrors. Do you guys have a preference on happy ending or sad ending? Joe has never seen the movie, I don't think, so don't spoil what they are. But do you know about the happy ending versus sad ending, guys, of Little Shop of Horrors?
I do not.
Oh, there's two very different endings.
Let's check out this episode.
Yeah. That's our next episode. Then we got a Fast Lane. And then we are back with Walt and Kim talking once again about Fast and Furious, not Tokyo Drift, but Fast and Furious number 4. And also, we highly encourage you to check out Los Bandoleros. Also, if you want to spend 6 minutes watching Turbocharged Prelude, you can. It's
absolutely
not a great
will.
Use of your time, but like you can do it.
But how many minutes?
Six.
I'm 6 minutes of my limited existence on Earth, yours in a heartbeat for Turbocharged.
Thank you so very much.
If it was just Recap, no, I would not do that. But Turbocharged?
Turbocharged. They made this as a way to sell. They repackaged the first DVD before the second movie came out. They're like, how can we get people to buy the DVD again a week before the movie comes out? It's like, well, let's put a 6 minute prelude on there. So,
because it's so necessary to understand the plot of the film.
It's like, how did... But Brian was in California. Now you're telling me he's in Florida? We better see him drive across the country.
That's literally what they do.
With Minka Kelly playing the character of Girl. Her name is Girl. Anyway, for all things Too Fast, Too... Well, actually, no. First off, thank you both once again.
Thank you, as always, brothers.
Thank you.
We are so happy to be
your time and your thoughts and your brains and your new segments, the D&D thing, the Who's Running Etion thing. I love both these segments every episode. They're very exciting. For all things Too Fast, Too Forever, go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/TooFastTooForever, or at TooFastTooForever on all the socials. Email us, family@cageclub.me. Check out our Patreon page at TooFastTooForever.com and our store at cageclub.me/shop. And come back next week for Little Shop of Horrors. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Too.
And that was Kim Basine and Walt Hickey. And we will tell you all about it
when we see you again.